And again, pure starch, pure sugar.
Yeah. Yeah, and anyway, I wanted to say something about, well, I'm going to say something about Rush, and I want to say something about Obama, too.
Okay. Say both.
Okay. I thought about my grandmother used to, she was, came to live with us when I was real little, and my folks worked a lot. You know, we have to work a lot, you know, to keep the roof over your head.
Right.
Anyway, she would teach me parables from the Bible. And the one that she taught a lot about, she talked about it, was Lazarus and the rich man. You remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is a balmy 92.5 degrees here in the studio. Looks like we got some more naked radio on the way this evening, and that's fine because you know what? It's Moran Monday on the horn. That special day when we highlight more than usual the excesses and the just plain old-fashioned butt ignorance of what it means to live in right-wing world. And we've got a lot of nominees this evening. There's no getting around it. We are more and poor this evening because there's bunches and bunches and bunches of them. So the sit back and relax and get ready because I don't know where to start. Let's see. We've got conservative actress Morans. Oh, look, there's DeLieber Moran. We've got more than one Congress Moran. We got fundamentalist Fox TV host Moran. We've got Arizona GOP Superintendent of Education candidate Moran. And what would Moran Monday be without a nice, healthy dose of just plain old-fashioned garden variety? Texas Moran. Constitutional Morans. We got Morans, and I mean plenty. No telling where we might start. Our buddy Maura sent along some photographs from this past weekend's Mermaid Parade in New York City via TPM. Lots of representations at the Mermaid Parade of damaged wildlife and damaged sea creatures as a result of the BP disaster. But, of course, we don't have to worry about imaginary sea creatures, and God knows Tony Hayward isn't, because Tony Hayward has gotten his groove back. Or more appropriately, I suppose, Tony Hayward has gotten his life back. You remember how poor Tony wanted his life back? Right, yeah. Well, Tony got it. Our first Moran of the evening can't help but be BP CEO Tony Hayward, who complained famously, you might recall, that he wanted his life back. Well, over the weekend, he apparently found it. He found it off of the Isle of Wight, I do believe. He attended a yachting race. News story noting on the 19th, that would be Saturday, BP PLC Chief Executive Tony Hayward was spotted attending a prestigious yacht race on Saturday as his company deflects criticism for its handling of one of the worst environmental disasters in U.S. history. Hayward was spotted by photographers on his yacht, Bob. You know, I think I'm going to have to send a cease and desist letter. His yacht, Bob, which was competing at the J.P. Morgan Asset Management Round the Island race off the Isle of Wight. Oh, super Tony. In an attempt to deflect the obvious bad press, some PR flack for BP said that he was spending some time with his teenage son after devoting most of the past 2 months away from his family. Family. Wow. That's some brass. Yeah, sure enough. That's a bunch of brass. He went yachting. Gee, Tony, why didn't you go yachting in the Gulf? Oh, wait. It's full of your oil! In a shameless attempt to create one of those famous for-profit media false equivalences, Jake Tapper over at ABC.
Investigative journalist Jake Tapper
tweeted. Yes, he tweeted. He tweeted that, meanwhile, the president and vice president are golfing today.
Really? Were they golfing on the Isle of Wight? Were they golfing half a world away from the problem? No, I didn't think so. But that's okay because, you know, there are at least, what's the number here? What's the number? At least 115. 115 Republicans who are in the same camp as Joe Barton, who apologized to BP on behalf of you and me. You know, because they got shaken down. Yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, it's their pro-corporate philosophy. They can live with it for all I care. The Republican Study Committee contains 115 people who share Joe Barton's philosophy of absolute deference to BP. And I don't know if you were over at BuzzFlash.com anytime in the last day or so, you might have seen a posting over there about the realities of some of the stuff that's been less considered than others. And in fact, our buddy Kate out on the desert has alluded to some of it as well. Nicholas Kozloff, writing for BuzzFlash today, says BP oil catastrophe unleashes a hidden toxic killer of life and climate, methane. Who would have imagined methane could be bad for you? I figured it was like CO2. You know, CO2 is good for you, right? Yeah, I didn't think so either. But Joe Barton probably, well, we know Joe Barton thinks it is. But Nicholas let's try this again with feeling. Oh, where'd he go? Ah, there he is. Nicholas Kozloff writes, in surveying the environmental damage unleashed from the BP oil spill, could we be missing the 800-pound gorilla in the closet? I don't think it's in the closet. I think it's out in the room. While oil poses undeniable ecological risks, methane, CH4, could prove daunting as well. About 40% of the crude getting into and destroying the Gulf of Mexico, about 40% of the crude is methane. And that methane suffocates marine life and creates dead zones because oxygen becomes so utterly depleted that nothing can live. Nicholas Kozloff goes on to write, while many will focus on methane's impact upon local wildlife, the compound, also known as marsh gas, also stands to affect climate. Indeed, though some of the methane from the Gulf will dissolve in the water, other parts will be emitted to the Earth's atmosphere. That is a problem, since methane is already contributing to our global warming dilemma. Once in the atmosphere, methane absorbs terrestrial infrared radiation that would normally move into outer space. This phenomenon can contribute to atmospheric warming, which is why methane is considered a greenhouse gas. Well, don't tell Joe Barton that. He'll want to go huff some methane. And good for him if he does. Kozloff also notes, if there is one silver lining to the Gulf tragedy, it is this. Methane has a relatively short atmospheric lifetime. As such, the compound is a prime candidate for mitigating global warming over the near term, say in the next 25 years or so. If and when the authorities manage to get a handle on the BP disaster, it'll be high time to engage the public about the need to grapple with this potent but little-known greenhouse gas. It's all part of it. It is all part of it. But don't worry, because Tony Hayward went yachting. Now, that's not to imply that I got something against yachts. I don't. I think it's magnificent. Seafaring, especially under sail as opposed to under diesel engines, I'm glad the technology still exists and is to a certain extent being advanced. We may need it someday. The fact of the matter is, if we set out to build a square-rigged, three-masted sailing ship of the sorts that plied the seas in the 19th century before the advent of steam power, fueled by coal and bunker oil, and we couldn't do it. We do not have the woodworking skills. They were lost. They would have to be rediscovered. And we may find ourselves in the position of having to rediscover it at some point. But it's the in your face nature, it's the in your face quality of Tony's little yachting trip. You know, I'm sorry his well blew up. I'm really, really sorry his well blew up. I would much, as would I'm sure everyone living along the Gulf or making their living out of the Gulf, I would much prefer that it hadn't. But it did. And if he wants to write the memo where he says he wants to spend more time with his family and resign, that's fine. But I hope he goes somewhere that doesn't have an extradition treaty with the U.S. because at some point, what am I talking about? We don't put multimillionaires in prison unless they steal other multimillionaires' money. Witness Bernie Madoff. But that was a real finger in the eye, wasn't it? Did he think he was just going to sneak off and go yachting on his yacht, Bob? I want royalties. Bob? Who names their yacht Bob? Does he have a dinghy named Biff? Leave that alone. I know how you guys' sense of humor works. Stop it. So, you know, we start out with Tony Hayward. But by no stretch of the imagination is Tony Hayward all we've got. No, I think my favorite Moran for this evening. My favorite Moran has to be former representative. Having trouble talking tonight. It must be the heat. I think my tongue's melting in my mouth. Former Representative J.D. Hayworth, Repig-Lickin of Arizona, currently the challenger to Senator John McCain for the Repig-Lickin primary for Senate. Oh, God. See, this is where the video would come in handy. You need this picture. You need this photograph. This the face on J.D. Hayworth is the face of Moran Monday. This is not to be... somebody grab this. Somebody do a screen cap or something. And get this photo of J.D. Hayworth. I'm putting it in the chat room right now. Yeah, you know what? Tony Hayward. Yeah, dinghy named Biff. No, David in Tennessee is quite right. He needs a lifeboat named Sink. Oh, I like that a lot. That's profound. That's professional. I guess none of his yachts are named Horizon or anything like... No. Probably wouldn't want to remind people. What would you have given to be a fly on the wall at Tony Hayward's yacht party off the Isle of Wight? The J.P. Morgan Chase Round the Island race. Man. Just to, because you know that some of that crowd were walking. Tony, I think it's just, that's atrocious the way you're being treated. I'm sincerely so glad you were able to get out here away from the small people and enjoy some quality time with quality folk. And of all the people, this was the one that kind of threw me. Once upon a time, he was a Democrat, but then he turned into a turncoat mugwump and became a Repig-Lickin from Alabama. Richard Shelby, Senator. He showed up talking to Bob Schieffer over the weekend. And I guess he's kind of the anti-moron. Anti-moran. He was interviewed about particularly this issue of Tony Hayward going yachting.
You were all over the Gulf Coast region yesterday. Did you run into any yacht racing down there?
Oh, I didn't, but I ran into a lot of people, a lot of small, medium-sized businesses, fishermen, you know, people that rent things on the beach, condominiums, small business people that don't have yachts but are concerned about their livelihood, and rightly so. I thought, Bob, that the fact that the chairman of BP had the gall, the arrogance, to go to a yacht race in one of his, in England, while all of this was going on here, I thought that was the height of stupidity.
I think that may qualify Senator Richard Shelby's words there. Those may actually qualify as a second to my nomination for Tony Hayward. The height of stupidity? Well, that's moranity, isn't it? Yeah.
And I believe myself that he should go. I don't know how he can represent a company in a crisis like BP and ignore what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, Congressman Gal, down there in New Orleans, you kind of got the nation's attention at another congressional hearing the other day when you suggested, I'm sure you didn't mean this literally, but you said...
No, maybe he did. Come on, Bob. Well, I'm sure you didn't mean this literally. He's talking to Congressman Joseph Ancal from New Orleans, who had suggested that maybe in a different culture the right thing to do would be for Tony Hayward to commit harakiri. I'm sure he didn't mean it literally.
Suggested that another BP official might ought to commit Harry Carey. What are your thoughts this morning when you get up and see pictures of Tony Hayward at that yacht race?
Again, Bob, I'm very disappointed of how out of touch the executives at BP are. Our people are suffering tremendously down here. I just received news from a staffer of mine that a Vietnamese fisherman actually tried to commit suicide. So it's a situation that is quite desperate for many, for thousands of people. Hundreds of businesses have closed since the oil spill, and the devastation to our wetlands and coastlines. We just have to wait and see the level of the devastation.
A Vietnamese fisherman actually tried to commit suicide. Tony Hayward didn't, and neither did Olaf Van Stedenborgen or whatever his name is that made the comment about the small people. Because this doesn't touch them. There is no circumstance, and honest to God, really, understand it, because this everything is boilerplated and contractually obliged. There is nothing, there is absolutely nothing that will make these corporate monsters any less rich than what they already are. Nothing. Not a damn thing. They can't be touched. We have a legal system in this country that says you have to practically move heaven and earth and do it with a teaspoon to get at them. And they won't be gotten at. There will not be any. Understand, please. I'm not saying this is some reason to give up hope. I'm talking about reasons that we have to take a hard look at our legal system and understand why it is it doesn't work for us anymore. They won't be touched because they didn't touch any of the large people's money. They're only hurting the small people. And as long as you're only hurting the small people, you're okay in USA. And you will not be touched. Oh, you might get some grief for going yachting aboard Bob. Yeah, you can almost hear Mrs. Hayward like something out of Caddyshack. Hey, honey, you must have been a looker back before electricity. You want to make $10 the hard way? I christen thee the Flying Bob. Sometimes I hate my imagination. I do. I really, really do. Because of all the things that, well, never mind. Never mind. But no, backing up just a minute. You've got it. This is beautiful. J.D. Hayworth, I mentioned him a couple of minutes ago. J.D. Hayworth was apparently having a hard time getting work when he got bounced out on his butt out of the Congress. Because in 2007, he took a job. Oh, this is good. I mean, this is Moran gold, okay? He took a job as a hustler on an infomercial. No kidding. He did. Thank God for TPMTV. They've actually got it. This is precious. The secrets how you can get money.
Billions and billions of dollars set aside each year by the government. Billions of dollars. Wow. Well, forgive me if I sound like a skeptic, because that's a lot of money. It sounds too good to be true. Congressman, is it for real?
It is for real. This is real. But let me assure you, it is real. I don't want to shock anybody's sensibilities, but I have to use a four-letter word.
Uh-oh.
Real. This is real. Now, look, I understand the skepticism, in part because President Reagan used to say the greatest contradiction ever uttered was, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. But I'm telling you, this is really true. But it's important to take advantage of the program. It's not sitting back and suddenly a thunderbolt. You have to take action, and that's where the conference comes in. You should come to one of the National Grants conferences, because there you receive information, information that equates with power. It's vital you attend the conference. This is something you should take advantage of. Why leave it to the big boys on Wall Street or even the business owners on Main Street? Bring it to your street. Come to one of the National Grants conferences. This is real.
Call the toll-free number now. Seating is limited.
That means you have to pay extra for a chair. Seating is limited. Call now. This is worse than the gold hustle. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Buy gold now. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time. Any portfolio that does not contain considerable amounts of gold is a portfolio at risk. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time. Call the 800 number appearing inside your skull right now to buy gold. J.D. Hayworth. Not that I give a damn about John McCain, but this teabag and asshat who runs around talking about the stimulus and Obama the socialist, this guy was actually hustling a scam to get people to pay money to come sit in a room and be told about how to get free money from the government. Because this is real. Yeah, it is. It's a real scam because, the Better Business Bureau took a look at it. And the company that was running these conferences, this hustle, this dodge, National Grants Conferences, from Proven Methods Seminars, you can find out how to get grant money from the federal government. Free money! The Better Business Bureau gave Proven Methods Seminars an F rating. The Federal Trade Commission received a letter in 2007 from 32 states' attorneys general about what a ripoff it was. Wow. And he's against government spending. And I guess this was okay with him because there wasn't any real free money. He was just getting money from Proven Methods Seminars to say that there was. The spokesman for J.D. Hayworth's campaign is a little creepy dude named Mark Sanders. And he said that, the McCain campaign's been shopping this video around, trying to get people to run it. Shopping it? That makes it sound like they're trying to get people to give money for it. No. Why would you? It's out there. It's for real. TPM asked Mark Sanders whether the hustle... they've used the word infomercial, whether the hustle was consistent with J.D. Hayworth's platform of cutting federal spending. Mark Sanders responded, and this is the quote, "Well, it's two different things. Cutting back on federal spending and educating people about what the federal government can do are two totally different things." And again, I would just reiterate, this company brought to Congressman Hayworth's attention by a very respected former congressman, sit down, this is good, J.C. Watts! So he had no reason to believe there was anything wrong at all. These are supposed to be the fiscal conservatives. These are supposed to be the people who
you know, really take that whole money thing seriously. Which means that their first priority, their first rule in life is there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? Everything costs something. And then again, you know, there are Fields' Three Commandments, right? That's easy enough. The first commandment, you can't cheat an honest man. The second one, never give a sucker an even break. The third one, don't smarten up a chump. Well, the idea that there's free money from the government out there, no, I think I'd be more inclined to trust Matthew Lesko with his little question mark suit. I saw that dude somewhere not in the last year or so. Weird. But no, free money. J.D. Hayworth says so. And this isn't hypocrisy. You know, the honest answer is, hey, you know, my boss was out of work. He came in on the Dodge because he was paid to. You know, it's just capitalism, baby. Caveat emptor. If you see one of these things and you call and sign up for the seminar, well, you're the moron. Because there ain't no free money. Free government money. 40 acres and a mule. Why not? Oh, I think we've got a very interesting little Moran Monday ahead of us. How could, with this for the start, how could we not? It's about 28 minutes before the hour. And, well, just wait. Because it's going to be, well, like I said, it's going to be a very, very busy evening. I have a feeling. It's Moran Monday on the horn. And we will find more Morans in a moment. Take a couple of breaks here and there along the way. An email rolled in from Reverbo of Cavalcade of Crazy earlier today, reminding me that we've had some significant birthdays over the weekend. June is a big month for the musical birthdays. Sir Paul McCartney celebrated his birthday on the 18th. On the 20th, it was Brian Wilson. And lo and behold, today, Ray Davies of the Kinks. And so in honor of Ray Davies' birthday today, a little something that even though it references the previous century, there's an air about it of what we've got going on for us in the 21st. Sadly, some things don't change as quickly as we might like for them to. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to the horn. We'll be right back. You know the phone number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333, email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. 20th Century Man on the horn.
Nightmare, the wonderful world of technology, neighbor. God's Jasper Bishop. It's an age of insanity. What has become of the green Bezzeville Dutcher? Ain't got no ambition. I'm just disillusioned.
Catch that line? Did you catch that line about no privacy? Oh, there's a reason beyond Reverbo's well-intentioned urge to mark the birthday of Ray Davies, which was appropriate in and of itself, of course.
But when I listened to that song earlier, and then I saw this and heard this, the two just kind of wrapped themselves together. You remember Senator Joe Lieberman, the guy who's never met an Arab he didn't want to kill or a Muslim who didn't need dying? That one. Well, Joe Lieberman thinks that we're just way too free here in America, and especially these here, the Internet series of tubes. I mean, you got to remember, it's not a big truck. No, it's a series of tubes, and Joe Lieberman's worried that they might be a little bit too free. So, over at Crooks and Liars, I found the footage, the video, if you will, which contains audio we can use here, of Joe Lieberman suggesting that everybody who disagrees with him needs to relax, because Joe Lieberman wants the President of the United States to have, wait for it, a kill switch for the Internet. Yeah, a kill switch. Because, you know, sometimes you just need to turn that pesky old freedom machine off. Now, I mean, it would only be parts of the inner tubes, not the parts that actually, you know, that sell you seats to go to free money conferences put on by F-rated businesses. No, it wouldn't kill that part. Now, you know what Joe Lieberman would take down. Crooks and Liars, see ya. Think Progress, see ya. Buzzflash, see ya. Malloy Show, see ya. The Horn, goodbye. You know, because sometimes a president might need to do that. Right? Sure. Tell us about it, Joe.
On a couple of other subjects in our final minutes here. First of all, you have an Internet bill. It's been called the Kill Switch Bill that would allow the president to seize control or shut down portions of the Internet if the U.S. was under some sort of cyber attack. I don't know if you've seen the Internet lately. There's a lot of people out there who think that what you are granting the president is absolute power to shut down freedom of speech. I mean, this is just over the top.
No, well, it is over the top. Wait till he explains who's already got the kill switch and, well, who he wants to be like.
And total misinformation. I don't know whether people are intentionally peddling the misinformation. Here's the fact. Cyber war is going on in some sense right now. Our civilian infrastructure, the Internet that runs the electric grid, the telecommunications grid, transportation, all the rest is constantly being probed by nation states, by some terrorist groups, by organized criminal gangs. And we need this capacity in time of war. We need the capacity for the president to say, Internet service provider, we've got to disconnect the American Internet from all traffic coming in from another foreign country, or we've got to put a patch on this part of it. The president will never take over. The government should never take over the Internet. And listen,
No president would ever overreach his constitutional powers, would he, Joe? I mean, no president would ever, like, use unconstitutional processes to permanently warehouse people who haven't even been proven guilty of a crime behind barbed wire for the rest of their natural-born lives. Now, would they, Joe? A president would never overreach like that, would he, Joe? No. Oh, wait. A president did. I mean, you know, a president would never order the wiretapping of the entire country just in the hopes of hearing something somewhere that indicated some degree of threat to some level about some guy living in a cave in Afghanistan with his portable dialysis machine. No president would ever do. No.
We've consulted, Senator Collins and I are proposing this bill, with civil liberties and privacy experts. This is a matter of national security. A cyber attack on America can do as much or more damage today by incapacitating our banks, our communications, our...
Notice the first thing he mentions. Our banks. Really? It couldn't incapacitate our national defense infrastructure, Joe? It couldn't cripple our ability to pass medical information back and forth or prove a hindrance to our first responders in a time of disaster, Joe? Oh, hell no, Joe! It might hurt the banks! Oh, Dr. Freud, courtesy phone. Dr. Freud, courtesy phone.
Our finance, our transportation as a conventional war attack. And the president, in catastrophic cases, not going to do it every day, not going to take it over. So I say to my friends on the Internet, relax. Take a look at the bill. And this is something that we need to protect our country right now.
Right now. Right now. Who's got one? Let's back up just a hair. Right now. Who's got one, Joe? Who's got one right now?
National war attack. And the president, in catastrophic cases, not going to do it every day, not going to take it over. So I say to my friends on the
just
Internet,
days
relax.
That end in Y.
Take a look at the bill. And this is something that we need to protect our country. Right now, China, the government, can disconnect parts of its Internet in a case of war. We need to have that here, too.
Yeah, Joe wants to be like China. Whew, doggies. A kill switch? A kill switch? I mean, there's one of those on the lawnmower. You know, you take your hand off the thing and the mower stops. That's so that you can't go down and cut your hand off while you're trying to clear the brush out from the wheels. Also known from time to time in the past as a dead man switch. But, see, now what... There are people that listening to this program right now who are far more computer savvy than I am. Suffice to say that from my standpoint, with a great deal of computer ignorance, and especially, you know, when you're way up into the Unablab 10,000s and stuff like that, isn't this a case of the locksmith can never make the lock that a better burglar can't pick. Ultimately, isn't this what? I mean, I would like to hear. I'd like to know what it is that you and I are doing that Joe feels like might need killing someday. Information-wise. Do we really want to be like China? In terms of the Internet? I mean, my God, that's the thing, isn't it? It's the fact that China has the ability to shut down dissent. China has the ability to wall itself off from news. I mean, my God, another totalitarian state. I don't know if you're watching the World Cup or not. But I was just wishing I could have a copy of the Pyongyang, the Daily Telegraph and Bugle Call of Freedom or whatever the newspaper there is in North Korea. Because they said that the match between Portugal and North Korea was being sent, beamed live into North Korea, you know, that closed state. I get a feeling the plug got pulled kind of early. Because North Korea got blanked today. Beat up, burnt, smoked, scorched, eaten alive, humiliated by the Portuguese. Who took down North Korea 7-0. You know, 7-0 is hard enough to achieve in baseball. 7 goals in one soccer match? It was sad. It was just sad.
And there was that. There was the North Korean soccer coach walking the sidelines in a black raincoat, a la Vince Lombardi, or you know any Soviet era. You know, just a black raincoat. And I'm thinking, dude, don't go home, because they're going to kill you and your whole team. If you'd lost 1-0, that would have been a heroic victory for an overmatched squad. But you got whipped 7-0. And you're making it real hard for the folks at the Pyongyang Morning Glory and Battle Cry of Freedom to write that heroic headline, North Korean Squad Wins World Cup. Oh, I felt real bad for all of those guys because toward the end of it, it just seemed like balls were raining into the net. It was, call the match on account of mercy. But see, when you've got a Lieberman kill switch on your internet. Well, then what's national security is anybody's guess and, more importantly, anybody's whim. Case in point. I've got a couple of news stories here from the New York Times about Supreme Court decisions rendered today. This one was especially disturbing. It was a 6-3 decision, which means that even Justice Stevens joined in it. Bless her heart, she's getting it right. Sonia Sotomayor dissented, which was inspiring. The Supreme Court today upheld a viciously broad law that forbids any kind of aid or advice to designated so-called terrorist groups. And this is the important part. Even when the support is designed to get those groups involved in a peaceful process and legal activities. The Obama administration had argued for the law to be upheld, for those of you who might No. The Obama administration, DOJ, Solicitor General, actively argued for the outcome that the Supreme Court granted today. We're not talking here about sending guns and bullets to so-called terrorist organizations. We're talking here about efforts to teach and facilitate peaceful dialogue as opposed to guns, bullets, and bombs. For instance, this law could have been used to upend efforts to bring the Irish Republican Army to the table. This law could have been used that was the first example that came to mind. Under the name of national security, the Supreme Court has now said that you can't do a damn thing to make violent groups renounce violence. You can't spend any resources with them, because that is aid to a terrorist organization, and it can, this is the important part, subject the group wanting to do it, it can subject them to criminal punishment. Oh, by the way, in case you were wondering, I said it was argued before the Supreme Court by the Solicitor General of the United States. Solicitor General went before the Supreme Court and argued that this law needed to be let stand, this broad interpretation that promotes more strife instead of promoting peaceful resolution of conflict. Yeah, that Solicitor General was Elena Kagan. You know, the liberal that the right-wingers are having such a hissy about. The one who's nominated to replace Justice Stevens on the Supreme Court. She argued in favor of this repugnant law and is, I'm sure, quite pleased with this repulsive decision. The decision was so bad that Justice Stephen Breyer actually read his dissent out loud in the courtroom. It's rather unusual to have that done. He wrote, "Not even the serious and deadly problem of international terrorism can require automatic forfeiture of First Amendment rights." He and Justice Ginsburg and Justice Sotomayor were the only ones standing up against an arguably fascist determination by the court. And, of course, via Elena Kagan, the Obama administration argued that this material support law is one of the most important terror-fighting tools in our arsenal to fight against terrorism. It's been used 150 times since September 11th. 75 convictions have been had. But the problem was, some of those cases involved situations like the case decided at bar today. The guy who represented the aid groups that were at issue, he's a Georgetown University professor of law, said that the ruling of the court, quote, that it means, quote, the First Amendment permits the government to make human rights advocacy and peacemaking a crime. Well, you can't have people out there making peace all over creation, because then the guns and bullets the industry will go broke. Well, what if peace was breaking out all over the world, for Christ's sakes? You can't have that. You can't let them see the big board. Because ultimately, someone has to speak in the name of peace. Someone has to teach passive resistance. Someone has to teach nonviolence. The United States Supreme Court today said, no, no, you cannot try to demilitarize or teach peace to a group that has been arbitrarily designated by the United States government to be a terrorist organization. That's disturbing as hell. And given the makeup of the court, given the fact that Justice Stevens will be replaced most likely by Elena Kagan, given the fact that Justice Stevens was in on the majority of this decision, and Elena Kagan argued in favor of it, what kind of court do you think would hear a challenge, a First Amendment challenge, to Joe Lieberman's kill switch law? Well, here's the short answer. The kind of court that rendered this decision today. The kind of court that will defer everything, including basic civil liberties, to the whim of the government. Well, we wouldn't have to have this kill switch if the internet wasn't so dangerous. If we weren't under constant attack by terrorist, communo-fascist, Islamic, internet, cyber hacker criminals, we wouldn't have to turn your internet off. Citizen, we will contact you by Pony Express when your internet is turned back on. God bless America and 9/11. 9/11. I didn't get a harumph from that guy. Harumph. I don't know about you, but I'm just a little bit disturbed by that kind of thinking. Because I guess, you know, no, I'm not going to relax like Senator Lieberman wants me to. News Ninja Susan noting, Bob, Joe wants to be able to shut down people who don't like what Israel's doing. I'd suggest that if Joe is that fond of China, he should maybe move there. They just love dear old Joe in China. By the way, remember how Microsoft claimed one of their OSs was hacker-proof? Took the hackers less than a month to crack the code. Snicker. Sciences. Every time you build a better mousetrap, you get a better class of mice. You just do. So that's our first hour of the program this balmy Monday, 92.3 degrees in the Horn Studio now. We will go to your phone calls when we come back, if you're so inclined. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
My father explained to me that when a fella hit me, I couldn't hit him back because they'd say we were bad and savage. So I had to stand to be knocked all around. On the other hand, I have never separated my work as an artist from my work as a human being. I've always put it even more strongly that, to me, music is always a weapon. Music is always a weapon. Always, 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 always a weapon.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
People's Mixtape.
Premiering Saturday, June 26th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, only on The Horn.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
And now the waiting is over, so you know the People's Mixtape premieres this Saturday evening at 7 p.m. only. On The Horn. See, I'm special. I get to listen to it first. Haha, you have to wait. And I guess concerning my seemingly incessant carping about the temperature inside the studio, Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, who is in Texas, just wrote in, wow, 92 degrees there. It was 112 at 1 o'clock here the last time I looked. Let me make something clear. It's 92 degrees inside the studio. If it gets much warmer and more humid in the studio, it's going to start raining in here, and we'll have our own weather system. But then again, you know, it's a sauna, so I'm maybe, you know, sweating off a little weight, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's good for me. Or at least we'll pretend that it is, right? Right. Couple of emails. For you, as before we move into the next hour of the program. Well, actually, we're already in it, but that's just my internal monologue getting loose. Ron in Raleigh writing, he says, no more of that damn Jesse Jackson gallivanting around the world trying to free hostages and such. No more peace activists talking to Hamas or Hezbollah or anyone else the government deems a threat. There you go. Exactly. And from Mora, Joe Lieberman's words are a Freudian slip to match his panties. Woo! Hard, sharp. But it's not like he doesn't earn it. Then this from Jim, J.D. Hayworth used to be one of Don Imus's boys, being frequently interviewed and as always making a complete horse's ass of himself as a self-benefiting huckster who failed in the ultimate hustle to sell himself to his constituents. And while I bear no love for John McCain, and I don't know who the Democrat running in Arizona is, if anyone does, it might be interesting. Well, if nothing else, the race is going to be interesting. John McCain needs to go away. So does J.D. Hayworth. But then again, you know, Arizona needs good government, which, sadly, it appears they're not going to be getting anytime soon. More on that later. Right now, however, to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, I was just thinking about that letter you read from whoever talking about what is the point of your show.
Yes.
Let me see. I wonder if those million hours of right wing, if anyone asks what's the purpose of those shows. I'm just curious.
No, because okay, but because we all know, because that's how the right wing delivers its marching orders.
Okay, so then the purpose they serve is to
activate their base.
But they wouldn't, so, you know, those people would never get a letter such as that.
No. No.
Because I found, you know, I mean, I just listened to the show on Friday. I mean, I found that really condescending, and I don't know. Which is probably why I didn't call, because I was just like, oh, no. I didn't want to touch that one. I just thought I'd let it just wash over me and just think, ooh, better Bob than me, because I was like, oh, hell no.
Well, you
don't listen to him, Esther, you know. And I'm not saying you don't have a point, but it's like, it's always, you know, the liberals who need to explain ad nauseum about every damn thing. So if you just want to have a show so you can vent, what the hell? Who cares? Although you did explain it quite well, but I just thought, you know, I don't know, just sort of bugged me. Because the person who wrote that, they have no idea what members of the Horn, what we do to make a difference at all.
No, and the thing that was bothersome to me, Sandra, was the fact that people do talk about what they do and what they're involved in.
Well, exactly. But I'm saying it's not a cry, you know, it's not a prerequisite as far as I'm concerned. And it's the same sort of attitude where the left and whatever progressive, they always have to be accountable in every single endeavor. Have you noticed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, that extends across the board, from ideology to philosophy to activism to, you know, how we fund groups.
Right, and it's funny how that just showed up, you know, right after, you know, you dared to ask for some help. That was another thing. I'm like, oh, I'd be goddamn. Now, of course, I could be reading a whole bunch into it. I probably am. But I just thought, you know, and, you know, good on you for reading it. But I was just like, oh, yeah, I don't know.
And, like I said, it rolled in just shortly before airtime. And I don't mean to make it sound like, you know, Max, I'm ready for my close-up or anything like that. But you try to get your head in the game. You know, you do your prep, you do your reading, you pull your stories, you put things in order, and then you just try to be in the game space, and it rolls in and just takes it and just turns everything sideways.
Well, I mean, you know, you're not sort of trying to get ears for advertisers. So it's not serving that purpose.
No. No, it was the phrase was echo box was one of them. But the one that crawled all over me like a dose of salts just ran right through me was the idea that that statement that somehow listeners to the Horn are lacking in courage.
And the right wing, that's the echo box, although maybe it's a bigger one.
Yeah, that's all they have.
Well, anyway, I don't know.
I know.
But sort of having to sort of justify it at all sort of bugged me, because obviously if it didn't serve a purpose, we are in the free market, then you would be off the air completely. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. We're trying not to work by that model.
Well, no, but I mean, exactly, but, oh, I don't know, you know, it just sort of really bugged me on, you know, just sort of.
Well, it didn't do me any good either.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I was just sort of, yeah, see that, just thinking about that.
See what it does? Yeah.
twisted up for sure. But, I thought it was interesting, the sort of Dave Obey. Have you seen that story or heard about it?
Refresh my memory. Yes, I have, but I couldn't pull it.
He was threatening or suggesting that, well, if I'm going to okay this $23 billion whatever for Afghanistan, I need to have the state, the unemployment, and the doctors payout sorted first. At which time Gates, I hate him, came up using an old Bush threat of, oh, the troops will be hurt if we don't okay this money.
I hate that. That's so dirty.
No, it's so disgusting, but it's like, what are we, back in the Bush years? Anyway, I was really surprised, so surprised that story came out, that I actually called Obie's office. And the intern, I don't really know. She wasn't too sure about the story all of a sudden. So he's notorious for caving, though.
Well, yeah, he is.
A lot of talk.
And, you know, what kind of leverage does he have? Because he's already said he's quitting at the end of this term.
Well, he's the chair of, he took over from Rangel, didn't he? So he's, you know, that's a big.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, there's no starch there because he's a lame duck.
Well, he could do it, though, because he's a lame duck, if he carries through. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, indeed.
But I'm not holding any hope. But, the fact that they need to tie this urgent, necessary domestic spending to this sort of war money, they've done that repeatedly. It's really disturbing that it's, like, standard now. You know what I mean? And I'm just sort of... Like, why in the world do you have to bargain that way to help the people here?
Well, right. Why do we have to be horse traded around?
That's what I'm saying. And it's sort of, why is pay as you go applied so diligently to domestic, crucial, needed spending? I mean, you know, this sort of Austrian, Keynesian sort of battle that's going on is so much BS. It's like, just use the government's power to spend to take care of this recession, because it will keep money flowing. I don't understand why they don't understand that.
And yet, as I was headed off the air on Friday night, you know, that story was there, that the attempt to do something for suffering formerly working class America had died in the Senate.
Yeah.
And it died because of the Democrats who got in bed. And they were, of course, the usual suspects.
Well, right, but it's just sort of, but there's never any discussion about this bloated military. And I mean, I think it's interesting that at least there's some bubbling of that, you know, sort of at least talking about it. But the way Gates came out, it was just like, oh, no, you know, you will never threaten our 53% of discretionary spending that we need every year, plus the supplementals, no matter what. You know, we don't care if you have millions of people starving in the streets, we're going to get that war money no matter what.
There,
kind of attitude.
Yeah. And bless his heart, I mean, there are a few people out there that are talking sanely about Afghanistan, for instance. Juanita sent me something along that she had received from Alan Grayson's camp. And it was pretty damned inspiring. He wrote last week, he said, in the New York Times for June 13th, the Pentagon proclaimed that Afghanistan holds almost $1 trillion in hitherto unknown mineral wealth. I get the notion Alan Grayson's a bit of a smart aleck. He said, allow me to offer these revelations. One, Paris Hilton actually is Albert Einstein with a wig. Think about it. You've never seen them together, have you? Two, the moon is made of green cheese, specifically a lovely camembert, slightly fruity, that goes very well with Cabernet. Three, while you were at work today, someone broke into your house, stole everything, and replaced it with an exact duplicate. Apologies to Stephen Wright. He goes on and he says, $1 trillion in mineral wealth in Afghanistan. What a lame excuse for a lame excuse. But the interesting thing is that the Pentagon felt it necessary to serve up this fevered imagining.
Why? Because they say they need another $33 billion for the war by July the 4th, or I don't know. They just say they need it. And for once, Congress isn't falling all over itself to give the generals whatever they want. So get ready to hear about lithium in Afghanistan, oil in Iraq, and diamonds in your bathtub. And it's true.
Well, no, and it lays bare the idea that, I mean, it was just a minute ago that people were so aghast that we would fight for oil. Remember that? Way back when?
No blood for oil? Right.
In 2005. Now, all of a sudden, the country is so whacked out that the Pentagon can say, oh, looky here. There's $1 trillion of someone else's resources, so we need to stay there. And now...
And wait a minute, and you know it's coming. And Afghanistan can pay for itself.
Well, no, and exactly. But the thing is, though, now it's okay. We're okay with going to war for minerals and oil now. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
It's another jump from a reasonable and decent to craven. What, because we're in this economic mess, we're now willing to, oh, yeah, let's go and do that. You know, we need it. So I'm just sort of...
Well, did you see Paul Krugman's comments about the mistake of starting austerity programs over the world?
Even every other article now is about, I mean, from him, is about how wrong-headed that is. I mean, you know, he's a Keynesian. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's what he would advocate. But it also, at this point, makes sense. No one's talking, saying that in the long run, these deficits need to be taken care of. But if you have taxpayers earning money, they pay taxes, right? Which will increase.
That's
revenue.
The theory.
Well, that's the idea. But if you don't, if you let it just go like it is, and you create an underclass, which is what, I think he even mentioned that, but that's what's happening with these sort of 99ers, as they're being called, because they'll never get another job again, I guess. I guess that's what, and it's going to be okay. I don't know how they're going to make it okay. You know, this is my pet peeve about economics right now. It's like, this is a so-called dynamic economic system where you have to have 5% unemployment in order for it to barely work. So how does it work with double that?
And I haven't seen a viable answer.
Well, you see a lot of tent cities, though.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a lot of people losing their homes even more. I mean, I'm just saying, but what I'm trying to understand, because, you know, I'm fairly cynical, not to be confused with not caring, but I am cynical. So I'm looking to see how the U.S. is going to go on with 15, 20 million people permanently unemployed. I don't know.
And you know, there's something that sort of dovetails with all of this. Sandra, did you see in the New York Times yesterday? Brian in New Hampshire sent this along to me, and it was a weird read. Op-ed columnist Ross. Why couldn't he be named Smith?
Oh, that guy about the agony of the liberals.
Yeah.
Well, he's just another right freak. Anyway,
that much I figured out. He's a right-wing gas bag. So, of course, he's being given time on the op-ed page of the New York Times.
Yeah.
But this business of, it's in a way, it was kind of like when David Brooks dragged Israel into a discussion about soccer last week.
Yeah.
But his last paragraph is, in this environment, the rage against Obama, meaning by liberals, for not doing more now, faster, becomes at least somewhat understandable. It's not that he hasn't done a great deal for liberals during his 18 months in office. It's that liberalism itself may be running out of time. What? I read that thing and I just thought, whose brand? What kind of liberalism that we're, you know? And along the way says that folks, you know, the so-called left, are disgusted with Obama, even though he let's see, where's this line? I gotta find it here because it just made me. Here it is. Nor do they acknowledge how much risk those self same politicians have already taken on with the first stimulus, the health care bill, and much else besides, in the name of theoretical propositions, while reaping little for their efforts save an ever grimmer fiscal picture. and goes on to note that that Barack Obama, and this was the part where I went, oh, my God, I'm living in an alternate universe. And he said Barack Obama delivered what no other president had been able to, that Barack Obama delivered universal health care. Did you catch that line in it?
Oh, no, no, no. I'm just listening to you because I know what article you're talking about, but I actually didn't read it because I don't read him. So this is the first time, but, I mean, it's just as I suspect. But what health care bill is that? Or is that some other universe, like you said? What is he talking about?
Well, this is the same Barack Obama, after all, who shepherded universal health care, the dream of liberals since the days of Harry Truman, if not Thomas Paine, through several near-death experiences and finally into law. When did we get the universal health care? I missed it.
No, I guess that's the meme now, to tell everybody it is, when what it is just delivering Americans, you know, forcing us to pay, and we won't get the coverage anyway.
I mean, this is the op-ed page of the New York Times. I realize, you know, they gave William the Bloody Crystal a job for a while, but no, this is the op-ed page of the New York Times. You can apparently now print total falsehoods.
Yeah, no, that's just a complete lie. It's unbelievable. I mean, every day we see, you know, more revelations are coming out about just how venal this health care bill would be because. What Krugman was talking about, too, is that the problem is the out-of-control health care costs. And I'm like, excuse me, didn't we just take care of that problem? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but
he acknowledges that that is the problem with the long-term deficit is the health care. And I'm thinking, oh, that was the bill that just went through.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know what to make of it. Maybe I think you're probably right. That's the meme. Is, you know, we're going to tell everybody there's universal health care now, and we're going to start talking about how universal health care doesn't work.
Yeah, but we're also going to continue to demonize the liberals. Who, I mean, what liberals is he talking about, though? You know, I don't.
Well, they're those strong. Yeah, they're those straw man liberals that exist only in the thin gray settlings between his ears.
Right, I'm just saying, it's like that whole thing. I mean, it's amazing how they can sort of beat up on the progressives from all sides, and we're such a threat when there is no threat. There's nothing threatening Obama. Is there any possible primary challenge that you know of?
No, no. The only hope out there is that this story from the Telegraph in the UK is actually true, that that Rahm Emanuel is gone after the November elections.
Yeah, well, the White House is denying that, of course, but as we know, those sort of things are never leaked out. That's never a coincidence, as far as I can tell. I mean, have you noticed that we haven't heard there's going to be any change at the Defense Department at all?
No. No, no, no. Everybody right. seems to be happy with Mr. Gates.
Right, and I think that, to me, that's like one of the most disturbing things is this freak that is there, along with the permanent war. We seem to have permanent personnel in the Pentagon.
Well, you know, what we have learned, though, Sandra, is that as far as Afghanistan policy is concerned, there's no reason to change the Defense Department, the head of the Defense Department, because there's no real change in the policy.
Right, and did you hear that six soldiers died today?
Yeah.
Six soldiers?
Yeah. And it's gonna keep on going. It's not going to get easier. It's going to get harder. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And you know, there's a whole bunch of weasel room around pulling the troops out in, what is it, July 2011?
Yeah, but I think there's upward to 93,000 American troops there now. Did you know that?
Yes.
I didn't realize it was so many.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're supposed to increase it to another 20,000 or something crazy. There's an interesting poll that came out showing that people are well sick of the wars, Bob.
Yeah, we are. And you know what? It's kind of interesting to me that polling data even exists, Sandra, because
what have we got to be, and I'm not being a smartass, what have we got to be sick of? What kind of coverage is there? I mean, I saw some coverage of Afghanistan done by, I guess, NBC's lead foreign correspondent. Can't remember his name now. But, you know, it showed guys shooting guns, you know, doing war stuff. It's not that much different from what was to be had on any given evening on the evening news during Vietnam. But all of a sudden now it's groundbreaking coverage.
Oh, no. I mean, it's just, you know, I just feel so totally manipulated. Just, it's just incredible. It's like a sort of play. Now we're in Act 3, you know, to keep this war going. And in the meanwhile, there seems to be no response from the people outside of the poll numbers are saying we're sick of it, but there's no mobilization to try to stop it. Although Congress is hesitating, they must be hearing it from their constituencies, I would think.
I would hope. I would hope, but I don't know. And yeah. And frankly, I don't know what hearing from constituencies means anymore. When you know, when Congress walks away from walks away from people who are economically crippled.
Well, no, see, and that is just the most disturbing thing to me, because I heard somewhere that 1.2 million will be without any income at the end of this month.
And that's is it because we are a big country, Sandra, that we can just ignore a number like that? That because numbers like that scare the piss out of me.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure what the tipping point is for that sort of stuff. You know, I have, you know, but.
And I guess that's the question we keep finding ourselves asking, is that where is the, and you know, I hate to keep it, where's the bottom? What is that sort of revelatory moment that sends us into some sort of national self-inspection? And are we even capable of doing it now?
Well, see, like I said, I think I said this to you before, that any previous administration, even when they were dealing with 7% unemployment or 8% like Reagan was, they were like doing stimulus and fiscal expansionary policies up the butt, be it tax cuts or government spending. They were doing something. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
That was only at 8% or 7%. 10%, they should be running screaming. But that's not happening right now. And it goes against all that I've learned about political science, I have to say, what's happening now.
And yet there's this thing, and I know it drives you as crazy as it does me, there's this thing going on in this country. I got sent a notice about it over the weekend. There are, like, fora taking place all over the country about the deficit.
Well, that's more astroturfing by these billionaires, right?
I don't know. Because I went and took a look at the organization that's hosting this thing. One of them, Saturday night in Beckley, there's going to be one, which is just 30, 40 miles away from me. Beckley AGA Community Conversation, Our Budget, Our Economy. Okay? And it's from an organization called America Speaks. And so, lo and behold, I checked their website out, and it's who is, you know, and they claim they are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization with the mission to reinvigorate American democracy by engaging citizens in the public decision making that most impacts their lives. And they've been around for 15 years, yada, 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 yada. And then they go on and they say, well, their advisory committee, this is where I went, ho, 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 looky. They got people from AARP, and yes, they've got someone from campaign for Center for American Progress, but it's all Brookings Institution, Business Roundtable, American Enterprise Institute, two of those people. They've got somebody from the Heritage Foundation. Oh, it goes, you know.
Well, no, but see, this is Right. This is, you know, what I've been sort of, you know, talking about for a while, that they're going to come after the Social Security.
And I can't, you know, I'm going to figure out a way to be there. We've got a new program that we're premiering on Saturday night, so that will run. But I'm going to go and record the thing if they'll let me.
Yeah, that would be good, because I think that it's just, you know, the propagandizing Americans to get them ready for cuts or some altercation of the Social Security.
I think it may be one of those only Nixon could go to China moments. It could be that we see this nastiness done to Social Security, and it can only be done under a president who has an ephemeral D after his name.
Well, apparently the only reason why we avoided this during the Clinton administration was because of the Monica Lewinsky thing.
Yeah.
Because Erskine Bowles was in his, he was there then, and he's like one of the main drivers for this commission that's supposed to report to Congress in a lame duck session.
Yes.
And can you imagine them trying to do this during a lame duck session? It's so despicable.
If they did that in a lame duck session, would that be finally the one thing that got people off their butts?
Well, I think that I do think that they're playing with fire on this one, but they're also insidious. I'm scared about how they're going to, you know, what Obama's going to do if he's on board with it, you know?
And I need to, you know, I think we all deserve straight answers. Because, you know, you've got this Sharon Angle woman out in Nevada, and she's just an insane creep, talking about it. Well, no, I don't want to just kill Social Security. I want to set up private accounts. Yeah, private accounts. And I don't know if you saw this, but when the guy who was asking her questions pressed her on it about the private accounts, well, wouldn't people whose money was in private accounts, wouldn't they have been destroyed by the stock market crash? Wouldn't that have wiped them out? And she just turns and says, "You're an idiot," and runs away. So that gives you an idea, at least, as to where their head is, doesn't it? Just, you know, say, "Oh, well, now that's not, no, that we'll tie it to the stock market, but it won't really be tied to the stock market." I don't trust them a dime's worth. And frankly,
yeah.
if there's Democrat, and you know, the usual suspects in the Senate will go along to get along with the Republicans if they can pull enough votes together. And that would be, you know, your Ben Nelsons, your Mary Landrews, your Blanche Lincolns. You know, why not? She's not going to be a senator for much longer. A lame duck session of Congress. What a time to put the shiv in the ribs for somebody on their way out.
I mean, sort of a different subject, right quick, but that Keegan arguing for that material support law, that's a bit special.
It doesn't give me a good, you know, I mean, as a lawyer, you go, you do your job. But you know what? When you're the Solicitor General, you sit down and you say, is this the right thing to do? And somebody inside the Obama administration, oh, we've got to have that. That's a vital tool in our fight against terror. I mean, you can hear the conversation, can't you?
Well, what I can hear, though, is that all of a sudden when people are involved, we can suppress and control their First Amendment, you know, their speech rights, but not for corporations. That's another thing I noticed about this decision. It's like, oh, people are involved. That's right. So, you know, they can be regulated and put away and accused of everything, but some felonious corporation? No, can't have that.
No,
it's a hideous. Anyway, I'll let you go. But did you see that that Acorn? You know, they have a lawsuit trying to get rid of that bill to keep them from getting funding, right?
Right.
And they won that. Did you know that the Obama administration was appealing that?
No, I didn't.
Yep.
Damn it.
Because, again, that's that discretionary function. Sometimes you look up and go, this is not worth the resources of the Department of Justice.
Right. So I just thought, you know, it's like not what they say, okay? It's really what they do. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Well, Sandra, thanks a million. We'll talk soon. And
All right.
Later.
Bye.
Bye now. From Sacramento, that is Sandra. We move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
I thought I heard that noise. I'm kind of on the blah side.
Oh, is it 90? Is it 93 degrees inside your house, too?
Well, it's a little bit cooler now. It was the oven, I don't know, it's like over 100 or something. But we're getting some afternoon rain now, finally, so it's a little bit better. No, I'm just talking about the whole situation of our life.
I know.
Politics.
Well, it's frustrating.
But I have a few things now. I haven't really been keeping up with a lot of the politics. It's just too much right now. And, but, you know, I hear little snippets from you and from, Jack. And, sometimes I hear some of the stuff on C-SPAN, and a lot of what I'm saying today I heard on C-SPAN. For one thing, the Democrats are going to spend $500 million to lure the voters who voted for Obama in the last election that hadn't voted before to save Obama. They're going to put out $500 million.
Wow. That's disturbing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like Jenk said, you know, he's so disgusted with Obama, you know, and he said that Obama is always gives in to the Republicans and don't give a happy about what we think, you know, we the people liberals. And it's so true, because you get all excited, you know, think, oh, they're going to do this and that and the other, and then they'll
Blow
it down so much.
I got way past my so excited phase a while
back. Yeah, me too. Me too. Because I just take it with a grain of salt, because that's about it. Okay, and then another thing I heard on C-SPAN. He's some guy, he claimed he wasn't a Republican. Somebody called him, told him he was, but he said he wasn't. He was independent. But he's talking about that we need to tax the middle-income people because they have the most money. And
it was those middle-income people who were in the race around the island there with Tony Hayward on his yacht, Bob, last weekend.
Yeah, and the girl that was on there, she kind of challenged him on it. She said, what about all the people that have lost their jobs, you know, and about, you know, isn't it the wealthy people that have the most money? He said, no, right now, you know, it is the middle income, and they're the ones that should be taxed. Basically, that's what he said. And I thought, well, you know, feed the people that in the tea parties and so forth, and they'll buy it. Feed them along and along, and they'll buy it. They'll buy anything that's, you know, against us and...
Well, and isn't that the frustration at the bottom of it all, is that our side is completely and totally taken for granted?
Oh, absolutely. And now they're going to come out and, you know, spend all this money to try to lure those people back. And I'm sure a lot of those people are disgusted. And then, like you, Sandy just said, that he's fighting Acorn getting back in power. Is that what she meant?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lawsuit, and the Obama administration is defending against the lawsuit.
Yeah. And then... I think she was also talking about all those leaders that are getting together on changing the economy and all.
Right.
Okay, this same guy that was talking about the middle income people,
Well, no, I think this was Jenk was talking about that they said whatever they decide is going to be it. There's not going to be any voting or anything. And he showed a reporter trying to ask Alan Simpson, you know, he's on that.
Oh, he's a hateful one, isn't
he? And he said that they're going to have to do something about Social Security because all the money is gone now. And the guy said, no, it should have like billions of dollars. And he said, no, we just found out that it is gone now, and we're going to have to do something about it. So that's part of what they're going to decide. And the way I feel right now is that you almost say, just bring it on and just go ahead and just let it start whatever the people want, these crazy people want. And you know, like Lieberman, he doesn't want that for Obama. He's pretty sure there's going to be a Republican in office. That's who he wants it for, besides Israel. And I'm a proponent for Israel as a rule, but not these people that are in charge, not these warmongers like...
I am a total right to exist guy. But you know what? I can't sell out my insistence that the Palestinians have a right to exist in order to support Israel.
They're talking about raising down some of the buildings that the Palestinians are living in.
Oh, they've been doing that for a generation now.
So they're talking about doing it again.
Yes, yes.
Right now.
Yes.
And the thing is that, you know, Bob, it's like they say, love your country or leave it, or blah, blah, this, blah. They said that back in the Vietnam days. Love your country or leave it. Well, no, love your country and change it. It's just like your children. You don't let your children go hare them, scare them, and just do anything and everything if you really love them.
No. No,
and,
because...
You know, even the Bible says, whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. They don't want our government that they want to be chastened in any way. We got to have it their way. Have it their way. And don't do nothing to the people, you know, that are...
Well, you mentioned whom he loveth, he chasteneth. You know, there's that old line in there. There's that line in there somewhere about spare the rod and spoil the child.
Yeah.
And most of your authoritarian religion types think that that is a call to go whomping your kids.
Oh, give them a good, beat your children. Yeah,
give them a good beating every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beat it, you know. They can
I was
only,
raised on that, too.
Yeah, well, you know, the idea being that children can hear only through their backsides.
Yeah, right.
But the fact of the matter is, if you think about what that rod was, and you think about so much of the imagery inside the Bible, Juanita, that rod is not something you beat the child with. That rod is how one gently guides one's flock.
Yeah, because if you love your children, I used to tell my son when he was little that if I didn't do what I was supposed to do, then God was going to have to take care of it later. And, you know, I know that we're supposed to, you're supposed to realize your children could do anything. You know, some people say, my child never do that. Well, watch out.
Yeah, they will. They're kids.
My son said when he was little that his Sunday school class, they had a guy teaching them, and he was saying, you need to look at my daughter, you know, and be like her, be a good little Christian like she is. She, you know, and my son said, Mama, she steals, and she hides stuff in her clothes and everything. And he just thought she was this little angel. But our country, I want to see our country get better. I want to see our country, you know.
Get well.
And it's so sick. It's sick, Bob.
Yeah, it's not, that's what I was saying. You don't necessarily, it's not so much that you want to see it get better. Yeah, you want to see it get well. You want to see it.
Yeah.
And we don't get well by making a greater portion of our citizenry worse off.
Right, right.
I mean, do these godless, soulless Republicans not understand what the poverty rate was?
among America's elderly before Social Security. Do they not understand, Juanita, that Social Security was created not by some altruistic urge to suddenly make people who were well off more well off? America had a situation where its elderly were starving to death.
Right, right. Both of my grandmothers, they had to live with whoever would take them in because they'd lost their homes during the Depression, and they had, or else they had what they call old folks' home. They didn't call it nursing home when I was growing up.
No,
they
it was an old folks' home.
Homes, but old folks' home for people that didn't have nobody. And then they said, like in New York, places in big towns, the old people were living on the street.
Yes.
Because they had nobody and they had no place.
I've got, I've got a photograph of my dad referred to her as Ma Davis. She would be my great-grandmother. And then I've got a photograph of my great-great-grandmother, who my mother referred to as Grandma Lizzie.
Uh-huh.
And it's West Virginia, but they were in no wise related, okay?
Uh-huh.
But they look like the same woman.
They dress the same way and...
Well, it's not so much how...
the same way.
Not so much why, how they're dressed, but how they look.
Yeah.
They both look like they're a million years old.
Yeah.
Their hair's up in one of those psyche knots.
Yep.
And the skin is drawn across their faces. They are toothless. And while they are, I mean, I know how old they were when they died. Okay?
Yeah.
And these photographs were taken of them when they were maybe 50.
Yeah.
Maybe 60. And they were living, you know, how can I put this? It is, living in rural America, and this is not to say that living in urban America isn't, but living in rural America at that time was extremely difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were at pains to produce your own food.
Yeah.
Your own clothing, maintain your own shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And much of the infrastructure that we take for granted didn't exist.
No, right.
And you're right. When you got to the point where you couldn't do it anymore, if some relative would not take you in, it was either die or die.
And a lot of people, a lot of them starved to death because if you ever read Erskine Caldwell any of his books.
Yes.
And you know, like Tobacco Road.
Right.
You know, the grandmother, she was completely ignored. You know, she's just old and couldn't get around, and they just ignored her, and they found her dead one day because she died of starvation.
And so the question is, Juanita, does the other side either, it's got to be one or the other, they don't know our past or they don't care about it?
Well, you know, I think it could be both. I don't think they care, for one. I just don't think they care at all. And they may not know it all. And they may not know that they may go through some of that themselves. They just don't know. They may very well go through some of that their own self. Before I go, I wanted to know if I could say something about Russ, what he was talking about the other day about the children.
Yeah, about dumpster diving and so forth.
Yeah. Okay, there are people, the children, for one thing, you're talking about going to look in the refrigerator, in the cabinets. There are some people who don't have those things. Some people don't have a roof over their head. And some of them, if they do have a roof over their head, it might be a tent, and they don't have refrigerators and cabinets. And some of them might have a house that they live in. But they still don't have a refrigerator or cabinets. I've lived without a refrigerator, or you run out of refrigerator, those things are expensive. And you have to just do without it because, you know, they're expensive. You can't afford them. And you have to get them on credit or something whenever you can.
I know that's what happened to me. I forget how long. It was a few years. I had no refrigerator, and I worked with this woman, you know, and she was nice, but she'd never done with that. She said, I never heard of anyone that didn't have a refrigerator. But, see, there's a lot of people don't have that. And then there's some that have that. They have the refrigerators, and they have the cabinets, but there's nothing to put in them.
There you go.
So this guy, he can pay Elton John $1 million to sing at his dumb wedding. And him to have the nerve, the audacity. Now, that's my man. I'd be afraid to die if I was him. Of course, that's my personal belief, you know. But that guy is running into trouble.
Well, and that's the thing. It was a totally meaningless wedding.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, you know, this is one of those guys that has argued in the past that the purpose of, and you know, all of his right-wing followers, you know, the Family Resource Council and that crowd, you know, the only reason for a marriage is so that the man and the woman can have sex together and make babies. Now, that's the only valid definition for marriage.
Oh yeah.
So does that mean that Tony Perkins is going to be dropping a rock on Rush if they don't crank out a little Limbaugh in 9 months?
Does he have any children?
I don't think so. I'm hoping not.
He's got a brother. I know that. Oh, they're coming out with a bunch of new books, right wing, about Obama. One of them they call Leviathan.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I turned the sound off. I couldn't listen to it. But I know that comes from the Bible. So I'm going to look it up and find out a little bit more about what it says about it.
Well, I read a review of Glenn Beck's new book in the Washington Post. My God. That wasn't...
What
whoever it was that wrote it didn't so much write a review of the book as pen a crushing brief against it. It was just
good.
Just blistered. What Glenn Beck had attempted to write.
That's another one. But really, Rush is the most dangerous. He really does have the most power.
But you know what? He's looking over his shoulder.
And he's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, only he's not nice.
Well, the wizard wasn't either at first. No, the person who reviewed the Overton Window was Stephen Levingston last Tuesday. And, I mean, you want to hear, let's see, the success of Glenn Beck's novel, The Overton Window, will be measured not by its literary value, none, or its contribution to the thriller genre, small, or the money it rakes in, considerable, but rather by the rebelliousness it incites among anti-government extremists. If the book is found tucked into the ammo boxes of self-proclaimed patriots and recited at Tea Party assemblies, then Beck will have achieved his goal. And see, that's the thing. This book is the follow-up, frankly, and I know you've heard of this thing before, Juanita. This book is the follow-up to the Turner Diaries.
Oh, wow.
You remember how Timothy McVeigh had a copy of the Turner Diaries?
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is the Turner Diaries for the 21st century.
Ah, I see.
And he goes, let's see, here it is. Thrillers often are marred by laughable prose, but few have stumbled along with language as silly as this one. When Gardner, who is one of the characters, when Gardner's son Noah meets patriot Molly Ross, really, Molly Ross, Glenn, Molly Ross, really, early in the novel, Beck writes, something about this woman defied a traditional chick-at-a-glance inventory. And then Levingston writes, it gets worse. When Noah notices that a few strands of Molly's hair have fallen out of place, Beck tells us, these liberated chestnut curls framed a handsome face made twice as radiant by the mysteries surely waiting just behind those light green eyes. Oh, God, you know, it was a dark and stormy night, you know. Which, by the way, Eugene Finnerman has taken pains to point out was penned by somebody who was not a terrible writer.
But this is the takeaway. The danger of books like this is that radical readers may take the story's fiction for fact or interpret the fiction, which Beck encourages, as a reflection of a reality that they must fend off by any means necessary. And here it is. The Overton Window risks falling into the tradition of other anti-government novels such as the Turner Diaries, which became a handbook of extremists and inspired Timothy McVeigh to blow up the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City in 1995. As Beck tells his soldiers in The Voice of Noah, put up or shut up, go hard or go home. Freedom is the rare exception, not the rule, and if you want it, you've got to do your part to keep it.
Wow. You said that guy's name is Levingston?
Stephen Levingston is the guy who wrote the review, yes.
Where's he at?
Washington Post.
I'm going to check him out. I like that. That is...
He's a book reviewer. He's a critic. Book critic.
He really knows... What's what? You know what I'm saying?
Well, the shame of it is that he didn't mention Atlas Shrugged, because it's Atlas Shrugged that really is the poison in the American political soup.
You know, I tried to read that book. I had a doctor recommend it to me one time, and I bought it, and I just couldn't get into it.
Well, whoever the doctor was, I hope you didn't go back, because any doctor that thinks that that's literature.
Well, I eventually did not go back to him because he was, you know what.
Yeah. And, you know, David in South Carolina writing in and says, it now takes 6 months to process a food stamp application in South Carolina. How's that for Christian love?
Wow. We just had a bunch of people down here in St. Petersburg, from South Carolina. Raised there, they weren't born there, but they were raised there. That did a home invasion, and there were people got killed, including one of them. And they wrote something about it in the paper, you know, about what's going on with South Carolina, you know. But anyway, that.
Yeah. Well, Juanita, it's good to hear from you this evening.
You too, and. I don't know. I hope for the best, but you know, sometimes I think we just go ahead and jump in and just take it on the chin, or take it in the gut, or whatever.
Let them do their damnedest, and then start trying to
fix our children, huh?
Let them do their damnedest, and then start trying to fix it.
Well, I don't know if it'll be fixable. There'll still be people who think they're right and blame it on us. Whatever goes wrong, so.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bob.
You'll get a kick out of this. Marty just wrote in and he said, you think that Washington Post reviewer is getting hate mail with poor grammar and spelling now?
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. But I know you from the stories you have told, you've seen your fair share of creepy, scary times and stuff, and you know what it's like to have the guy from the county chewing on your leg.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, there's a few more things have been going on involving our county. They're halving up our garbage delivery, and they're going to give us a $25 less fee this year, and next year. They'll review. They said, oh, people can really use that $25 now.
Oh, mercy. Don't spend it all in one place.
And see, you have to pay all that on your home taxes.
That's not a separate thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, we've got privatized garbage collection here, and it's a real doozy.
I bet. Okay, well.
All right, Juanita, have a good evening. Bye
you
now.
You too. Night-night.
And I tell you what, we'll take a little break and come back. Because it is, it's down to 91.2 degrees in here, but it's cooler outside than it is in here. We're going to take a little break, step outside, get a cool breath of air, and we'll get things going right back. Now, I got blinking lights here. Don't anybody run away, okay? We'll take a break. We'll come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice on Moran Monday. This is The Horn. A little selection from John Fox. The Black Crowes.
And you close the door, and you let me see what you're really here for. Then you lay me down in the nightmare bed, and you show.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
My father explained to me that when a fella hit me, I couldn't hit him back because they'd say we were bad and savage. So I had to stand and be knocked all around. On the other hand, I have never separated my work as an artist from my work as a human being. I've always put it even more strongly that, to me, music is always a weapon. Music is always a weapon. Always, 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 always a weapon.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
The People's Mixtape.
Premiering Saturday, June 26, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, only on The Horn.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
12 and a half past the hour. Yeah, I run it twice. I want everybody around. 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock, Saturday night. The People's Mixtape. Give it a listen. I think you're going to be blown away. I just did. So be there. Aloha. And there'll probably be some of us in the chat room and stuff. This should be fun. By the way, another mention, another something to make you aware of. I'm sure a lot of you have listened to the Rick Smith Show in its reruns. Usually starts around 5:20 in the afternoon. On Saturdays. Well, I don't know if you realize this or not, but you can now listen to Rick Smith live at noon Eastern Time, Saturday and Sunday, right here on The Horn. Rick has begun streaming the show live via the Horn servers. So, you know what? Join in. Listen in. Rick is Rick is stunningly good talent. He's a very humble man. He's a very self-effacing man. He's also a very, very intelligent man. And I think with him going live now, the opportunities are your participation are significantly increased. It's not the same phone number as here. You'll have to listen to him for the phone number. But you want to check it out. You want to check out Rick Smith live on Saturdays and Sundays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Do that, would you? Okay. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim. What's up?
Not a whole lot. Listen, just two things. First, my compliments to Juanita. She is always a voice of compassion and human decency, and always a person who has seen pictures from that book, Margaret Brooke White. You have seen their faces about the people in the Depression.
Yes.
The poor houses and people being driven into the streets without means of being sustained simply because they happen to be older. And she speaks great words of wisdom. She really does. And what we're talking about economically, internally in this country, is of the reverse of social engineering.
How so?
Well, with the destruction of maintenance programs like Social Security and medical care, and just basically the respect and the attention of people as they grow older.
And in this case, the reverse social engineering is to just sort of clear them out a little quicker?
Effectively. You know, the strange thing about it, Social Security did not come into being in this country. It came into being in pre-World War I Germany.
You're absolutely right. Bismarck.
Exactly. And he said...
Same with workers' comp.
Give the working man security when he is older and maintenance when he is sick. And the radicals and the revolutionaries and the nihilists will sing their bird calls in vain. And there was a great deal of truth in that. And
he was a very calculating man.
Exactly. And pre-World War I Germany was much more advanced and socially sophisticated in its maintenance programs for people than any other nation in Europe. And that's, you can go back to the history books and read that. And apparently there are people who have, well, they simply lost track of that through lack of ignorance and their own greed, avarice, malice, and every other negative adjective and word that I can use to describe people who just don't care. And there are, of course, those who are terribly misguided. And to me, this is horrendous. And it is social engineering in reverse. They're trying to destroy a lot of things that are going to hurt a lot of good people and a lot of decent people.
And that's the same question I posed to Juanita, Jim. Once they've done it, will people look up and say, hey, that was dirty, and move to start fixing things, or will they just say God's will and move on?
Well, I don't know, but I think you can get to certain points or certain situations that you have reached what I call the social event horizon, that you're sliding right into a black hole. That's the way I see it. And the second thing is about this continuation of the war in Afghanistan. Now, this is not a war which we hope to win. It's an unwinnable and an economically unsustainable war.
It's crippling us. It is bankrupting us. It is doing to this nation what the Soviet occupation did to the Soviet Union. Everybody credits, Jim, and you are far more adept on this subject than I, but, you know, all the right-wingers like to say, well, you know, Ronald Reagan destroyed the Soviet Union. No, he didn't. The Soviet Union destroyed the Soviet Union in part with its horrific, misguided nightmare in Afghanistan. That's why Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires, right?
It is. I mean, the Soviet Union literally imploded because of God's plans, its centralized planning, and the lack of consumer goods and things like that for the Russian people, and also because of the tremendous drain Afghanistan placed on an already faltering Soviet economy. And that's exactly what happened in that country. And it certainly put those people through a lot of hard times. I mean, when Yeltsin was in there, he was telling people, oh, well, there's so many consumer goods in the market available, but yet the people who were left without salaries when the state couldn't pay their own salaries and things of that nature, they didn't have the money to go to the market. They didn't have the money to enjoy the newly established quasi-capitalism that had come after Gorbachev and the decline of the Soviet Empire. There it is. And I think our reasons for being there, and I might be wrong, are geopolitical. Because look at the position of Afghanistan. Where is it? It borders on two countries, Iran and Pakistan. And where is it situated? It's right at the base of the heartland. Remember Mackinder's heartland theory?
Yes.
Well, that's part of it right there. And in my opinion, we are in there to stay for much longer than I would ever like to think that that will be the situation. And the minute we leave one place, those people come back and they take their revenge upon people who have collaborated with the Americans in a most horrific manner. And it's...
And at the same time, because I got a blast, one of those right-wing blast emails that pollute my inbox, I got a PR email earlier today. I went looking for it, couldn't find it. But it talked about Christians being persecuted in Afghanistan and how they're, I guess, to flame the passions of the people, they've been playing this video of a baptizing and you know, Afghans renouncing Islam and becoming Christians, you know, for God knows why, you know, maybe a cooking pot, maybe $100 cash, who knows? I mean, that's the way things work there. But now you've got the radical extremist side of Islam, as opposed to the radical extremist side of Christianity, which is what's in Afghanistan, up in arms. And that doesn't help either.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, it exacerbates the situation. And it is really, it is completely establishing an even more unwinnable situation, because I really don't think we have won the hearts and minds of those people. And when they start talking about all this mineral wealth and stuff in Afghanistan, they're not talking about $8 trillion. They're talking about multiples of $1 trillion, much more than just $1 trillion. And I ask you, even if they were to develop that those resources, who would be the benefit of it? The Afghan warlords that are very much in power still now, outside the outskirts of Kabul, and that's just about it. And with Mohammed Karzai, I don't have a great deal of faith in him. I mean, he's just a rote opportunist. And
well, the other beneficiary of the blood, sweat, and tears and toil that would be required for all of that would be, of course, the Chinese. Because that's close enough for it to be an actual resource colony for China.
Exactly.
And it could very well be that we are precisely doing their dirty work for them for that reason.
Well, in our actions there, we have inadvertently created a power vacuum into which a nation like China could be drawn, just as the way they were drawn into Tibet after World War II. And in other words, we're going over there and we set up a puppet government, just like the French set up this puppet government under Maximilian in Mexico during our own Civil War. And when, of course, the French withdrew their troops from Maximilian, guess what happened? He was lined up against the wall and shot.
Yeah, wasn't there something, didn't he have something, isn't there something memorable that was noted as he was shot? It's such a lovely day or something like that.
A finer day to die on a day like today. But, I mean, he was just a puppet of Louis Napoleon III of France, who wanted to establish some type of empire in Mexico, and which is completely contrary to the Monroe Doctrine. And, you know, it was just a matter of time until the Treaty of Miramar which was what he and Napoleon III had negotiated, completely collapsed, and Napoleon III withdrew. And shortly thereafter came Louis Napoleon III's own demise, and with the advent of the Franco-Prussian War. But this is a situation over there in which we are seeking the most, in the long run, unprofitable, because I don't care how many troops we send there, As soon as they're gone, the power vacuum will reabsorb the forces that were in play there before, and it's going to make even worse than before. They're going to draw in other nations. And
well, yeah, and the fact of the matter is, if they're standing up in their governmental legislative body demanding execution of religious heretics, what have we accomplished? That for me was the walk away on that story, Jim. What have we accomplished? Because that, you know, weren't we erasing the Taliban for precisely that kind of conduct?
Exactly. And what we're doing, Bob, is we're going to create a situation over there that's even worse than the Taliban.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's going to be the Taliban with opium instead of without it, because you might recall the Taliban did try to eradicate that trade.
Well, I think that trade is doing quite well.
The land office business, I'm told.
And secondly, in both Iraq and in Afghanistan, I think there are two documentaries that are coming out about the needless slaughter of civilians by mistake.
Yeah, and predator drones and so forth, exactly.
Well, it's things that are just, I mean, I understand war and I understand collateral damage, but my God, can't we learn that we simply are unable to keep going in an area, a world that is 14,000 miles away? There's no way we can sustain that. And if people think they're being patriotic by doing this, I think they're sadly mistaken.
And you see, Jim, that's the thing with Afghanistan. It's very, very clear that that the American people don't want to be there by like 80%.
No, we don't want to be there because, I mean, what do we have to show for it? I mean, just being purely selfish, what do we have to show for it? I can't see very little.
I guess it's been good for the defense contractors.
Well, unfortunately, for Blackwater and for people like that, these defense contractors who have made money keep my jowl at the expense of the blood of our servicemen, it makes me extremely unhappy. And to have them wrap themselves in the flag is even more reprehensible.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Jim, thank you very kindly. I do appreciate your comments this evening.
Well, I wish I could say something better, but again, my compliments to Juanita, and also I hope that you will have a good show tonight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
Good night.
Bye now. Sometimes it's hard to be a ray of sunshine about something like Afghanistan. Not a lot of sunshine there. Just a poor, benighted place. And the thing about Afghanistan, it's not anywhere that you want to be. It's just on the way to somewhere you might like to be. It's just geographically situated to always be trouble. And, you know, I noted the fighting in Kandahar province. And that fighting in Kandahar province, I couldn't help reflecting, well, you know, damn. Kandahar, Iskander, Alexander. Kandahar province is the area where Alexander the Great tried to set up a base of his Macedonian troops. Planned on coming back there, but then, you know, he got dead, and that really gets in the way of that kind of thing. But he chose Kandahar because it was defensible. And look at us. Guess what? It's still defensible. Alexander was no slouch. And I ask the question that I've asked time and time again. Who within the apparatus of the American military is the equal of Alexander? Hint, we don't have any of those. None. So if Alexander took it and was hard-pressed to hold it, what makes us think we could? As Jim asked, you know, how does this end in anything positive for the American people outside the defense contractors? answer. It doesn't. It just doesn't. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin. What's up?
How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, I have office hours, so I'm kind of free now. I've been listening to the show. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, man. Is it true, and maybe I could pick your brain on this, that New Zealand is the largest legitimate producer of opium?
New Zealand?
Yeah.
I
don't know.
That's nothing I've ever heard. John Fox is in the chat room. He might know something about it, being how he's down, you know, not too awfully. Well, I mean, still far away, but not nearly as far as it is from here.
Yeah, for legitimate production of opium.
Never heard that before.
Okay, you know, for medical, because, you know, opium is the base ingredient for a lot of our pain, for our anesthesia and things like that. You know that, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's still... Yeah, it has legitimate medical uses, certainly.
Yeah.
For refinement into morphine.
Yes. So I was hearing somewhere, I don't know which one, or I came across it, that New Zealand is the largest producer of that source of opium. Okay, anyway, what I'm getting at, if that is true, why can't they use Afghanistan, legalize the opium trade, and make them the number one producer of opium on the planet?
Well, that one I can answer pretty easily, and I can answer it with an illustration.
Brown people, colored people, that I know.
No, this isn't that. Back when I grew up down in Alabama, I lived in something called a dry county. Southerners will not find the concept of a dry county at all surprising. They recognize it, and it's just how it is. They still exist to this day. People from the civilized United States hear, dry county? What's that? Well, it's a county where you can't sell any booze, and there's dry counties, and there's dry counties, and I lived in a dry county. No wine, no beer, no liquor. If you wanted to buy liquor inside my county, you went to one of several well-known bootleggers. Or you drove to Selma, Tennessee for liquor, or the Tennessee state line 11 miles away for beer. Or you drove 72 miles east to Huntsville, Alabama. Now, with that being the case, you can imagine that the bootleggers had a very, very, very strong incentive in keeping the county dry. And throughout my childhood, every so often, there would be one of those... ballot initiatives to allow the sale of beer and wine and so forth in my home county. When those came around, the Baptist ministers and Church of Christ ministers and Methodist ministers and all the ministers and all the righteous upstanding people who only went to the liquor store at night when they couldn't be seen would band together and form a committee for decency and morality, and their number one contributor would, without fail, be the consortium of bootleggers. You see where I'm going?
Yes, sir.
The Afghan warlords, the last thing in the world they want is some sort of legalized opium trade in Afghanistan, because that drives prices down. Because the only risks that they are taking is the occasional revenge killing and the occasional law enforcement killing of one of their, you know, under-lieutenants or some poor bastard who's just trying to farm his way into staying alive till the next year.
Oh, God.
And so, you know, it never touches them. And so, consequently, it's the last thing in the world they want. They like the illicit trade because the illicit trade is much more profitable than the legitimate trade ever would be. John is telling me in chat, by the way, that he doesn't know anything about New Zealand. He says, we do have poppies in Australia, though. Here's the fun part. The wallabies get whacked on the poppies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the wallabies, littler than a kangaroo, but like a kangaroo.
Yeah.
Yeah, they apparently eat them and get wasted.
Wow. Because I heard somewhere that, you know, either Australia and New Zealand is one of the largest producers of legitimate opium on the planet.
Well, I'm sure it is very, very closely regulated, if that's the case. And that too militates against the notion, since you would have to have actual legitimate functioning government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so, because I was saying, like, why, you know, the whole Afghanistan thing is, why don't they just legitimize and regulate the opium trade and have these guys become like the next Australia and New Zealand?
And I think we've got a pretty good working answer.
Yeah. Well, like Chris Rock said, you know, when it comes on to drugs, you know, only brown people cannot have that much power.
No. But it's like this so-called mineral wealth that's there. You don't want that in the hands of the Afghans. You want that in the hands of the people who are occupying the Afghans.
Yeah. Well, it's the continent of Africa, too, you know.
look, sure.
Same thing. Gold, you know, gold and diamonds, you know. How many African diamond, come on, what's his name, from your favorite reverend there?
Pat Robertson?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell is he doing in Liberia owning a diamond mine? Or a gold mine?
Money. I was reflecting on something similar the other day when I was watching the Ivory Coast nation play in the World Cup. And, you know, the Ivory Coast, we've still got a country called the Ivory Coast. It's not because of the color of the coastline. It's because of the massive trade in dead elephant tusks.
Yeah.
Those kind of things are culturally never fair. It seems we can't get very far away from them.
Yeah, Joseph Conrad all over again.
You know, I probably need to sit down and reread Joseph Conrad.
Yeah, well, I've been reading it out here.
Oh, and I'm also being told that New Zealand and Tasmania also are one of the world's finest hops-growing areas in the world, you know, in terms of flavoring beer, hops.
Yeah.
He says it seems that that area is the southern hemisphere twin to the German and Czech hops-growing regions.
Okay. But if somebody on the network can look that up, I'll greatly appreciate it.
Well, we'll see what we can find out.
Yeah. Because that's one of the things that I was, you know, rattling my brain over with this conversation. I know, why can't Afghan be the world's largest legitimate opium producer? You know.
Indeed.
By the way, how's the situation going? If I may ask.
It is coming along. We're not there by any stretch of the imagination yet. But I'm beginning to, like I said, I'm beginning to marshal some, marshal the supplies, and I'm trying to find out who does the, you know, who does the dirt work and who's certified to run the dozer, and what a nightmare.
Okay, question is, and not to pry into your personal business, but can you at least delay them another month?
I'm going to do everything in my power. I mean, we're going to. If I've got a pile of supplies and getting ready to break ground at the beginning of the month, then they've got to see that we're working with them.
Okay, so at least
God, at least I hope so.
At least you have that going on. If I'm going to assume that, right?
I'm not assuming anything right now.
Okay, because you know, I'm going to try again, but it has to be like next month sometime, okay?
I understand. I understand completely, and I appreciate you being willing to help, Kevin. I really do.
Okay, no problem, brother. And I'm going to let you go, okay?
All right, you take care, and have a good morning.
Okay, you too, sir.
All right,
okay.
Bye now. Bye. Calling from South Korea, formerly of Brooklyn, now of South Korea, that's our buddy Kevin. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Garrett?
You know, Tony Hayward, we should just retire him like we retired Palin for Moran Monday.
You know what? Today may have been his retirement moment, but I hate to challenge him like that.
Yeah, because, I mean, that...
Because, see, if I do that, then next week I'll find out he's been out racing his yacht named Horn.
Because, I mean, he's either that arrogant or that dumb to be out yachting while his company has turned.
Nah, but see, I don't think it's that yeah. dumb, Garrett, because you know yeah. what? We've got a media, a for-profit media here that are actually doing BP's work for it by advancing that business of the shakedown.
It's just, yeah. Because it's a cool, you know, and that's, but it's no shocker with the corporate media, because of course they'll scratch some corporate backs. I mean, just show them a little money, and, well, BP's certainly done that, showing a little money lately, you know, and we'll scratch yours.
BP got busy and entered the 21st century. They've got an aggressive social media campaign going.
Yeah. Well, it's just like
you can go be friends with BP on Facebook, but you can't comment unless you like it.
Yeah, but you know, that's just like Toyota. I'm sure you've seen the incessant ads that, you know, have been, you know, tying directly into Facebook about Toyotas. Like, I like your cars. They're so, I've had multiple, and I'm definitely going to buy my next car. You know, completely forgetting, just what happened earlier this year to Toyota. You know, never mind any of that.
Right, forget it. Driving. These are not the droids you're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, and it's all a game. I mean, because my second, you know, moranitude for this week is that, you know, I'm sure you're aware, because it's been hoard in the corporate media for the past, it's been, you know, hyped endlessly, is that Toy Story 3 came out this weekend. And here's the thing. The first two movies did not receive a single negative review.
Yeah.
Not a single one. The third one did.
Oh.
Three of them. And since one of them is Armand White, it's pretty obvious. These three people are looking for attention. Total attention whores.
So there was no legitimacy to anything that they said about the film.
I haven't seen it yet, but everybody I know that has seen it says it's fantastic. I mean, Armand White, his blurb on Rotten Tomatoes complains about brand names and product placement, which have been everywhere in the film, in all three films.
Sure. Yeah, it's a vehicle.
You know, but that, you know, that's just the sugar coat. That's just the sugar coating that, you know, to get the plot forth. And, you know, one, the second one, a guy named Cole Smithy, who's an internet critic, he hypes himself as the smartest critic in the world. So, you know, well, that just tells you all you need to know when that's the banner of his website. And the third one, well, the writing wasn't very good, just suffice to say. I'll just leave it at that. I know, so, you know, it's just, that's, you know, just a perfect sign. People will piss on anything, on some things for the sole purpose of making a buck.
Oh,
and of course they'll get, yeah, and of course they'll get rewarded for it because, I mean, you know, now they're well known, you know, because you get this movie series that's had no negative reviews and suddenly 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, I know, but this is America. You know, we do those kinds of things.
Yeah, and it's just, but yeah, I mean, it just amazes me that, you know, people just can't stop griping about, of all the things to gripe about, that's pretty low on the list. I mean, you know, I can kind of see, like, griping about, ooh, everyone's pushing soccer on us, because as Olbermann said on angrily said on Thursday, there are a lot of people that treat you like morons if you don't like soccer. I mean, it's not most of soccer fans in the world, to be certain, but you are looked down upon in some circles. But, you know, it's not, you know, but a movie about toys, it's like that from a studio that pretty much everybody says is good, when we have this big pile of oil, you know, in the Gulf, and we have all of these teabaggers who are trying to hide themselves from being teabaggers, thanks to Dick Armey, who obviously is trying to hide the fact that he has a Dick Armey. Because you did see that one, right?
Yes. Yeah.
In fact, that's another nominee, just out of spite. I mean, come on. You know.
Oh, my God. Moran Monday has evolved to the place we're doing spite nominations.
I mean, because, you know, it's like, he's all about, he lets them get this highly sexualized name while and now he wants to take it away, you know, while still realizing that here you are, you're, what is he, in his 50s or so now, at least?
Yeah.
And he's going by the name of Dick?
No. He's up in his 60s if he's not 70 by now.
Oh, he's even, yeah, that's the thing. The rot happens so quick with these guys. You can't.
But see, these guys, you got to remember, the sense of humor on these guys is strictly juvenile.
Yeah. But
he's 70. He will soon be 70. He'll be 70 on July the 7th.
Oh my God, he's born in the same month as me. Ugh.
Sorry.
That's disgusting. Hey. I'm born on the 20th. I have Carlos Santana and Diana Rigg.
I know people who share a birthday with Adolf Hitler, so just, you know, feel good.
He's
Dick, and he's 69ing until July the 7th, okay? There, we've done it.
Yeah, we've...
I'm so ashamed.
Yeah, I mean... He lets it perpetuate, but yet, no one want to take it away. But here's the thing, Dick. Stop calling yourself Dick, even though it is a very...
No, but see, I don't want him to, because every time I see his name, I think, you know, you can't teabag America without a Dick Army.
This is very true, and oh boy, are they ever. I mean, just like... Sharon Angle.
You, like David from Maine, have a pop culture the component to your nature, Garrett. Do you remember Northern Exposure?
Yes, I do.
Who knew that Janine Turner was a wingnut?
Yeah, that was kind of depressing. That was kind of depressing when I first realized that. I mean, you know, and it's like not. It wasn't like a minor one. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like, for instance, like Selleck and the producers of Magnum that seem to be a bit more moderate Republicans. She's like, she's with Chuck Norris over the edge.
Oh, yeah, she's got, well, she like,
Victoria Jackson is trying to invigorate a hustle of her own now, because, see, she's another one of these right-wing whiners, Garrett, that says, "Oh, ever since everybody found out I was a filthy right-wing nut, I can't get work in Hollywood with all those liberals anymore." So
yeah.
she's got a new blonde dye job and showed up on Fox News being interviewed by Chris Wallace. Throwing softballs.
Yeah.
You know, giving her a big, big blast for her website, which I will not name. But no, I didn't know she was a wingnut, and it kind of bummed me out. It's like, oh, there's another rerun I can't watch when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean,
because I like Northern Exposure.
Yeah, it was kind of goofy. I mean, granted, can't buy the DVD since they took out all the frickin' background music from it. One of them, yeah, that's one of the many. It's made by Universal. Universal's one of the worst, but yeah, they stripped the crap out of it. I didn't even buy a single set when I realized that.
I had not. Yeah. And so Chris Wallace says, "And so, like a modern Paul Revere, Turner will keep spreading the word about our founding principles and warning about a government she feels is infringing on our freedom." And she says, "I want every American, other children in America, to know they have rights, to know that they can speak out. If they don't know their rights, they won't know when they're being taken away." Which rights? You know, which rights? The rights not to starve to death or die in the streets?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, because that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing for a famous person to be a Republican. You know, we can, you know, when they're rational and what have you, and old, you know, at least, you know, willing to agree and, you know, act humanly. But when they go crazy like her and Victoria Jackson, it makes you just want to frickin' retch inside.
Well, and the thing is, you've really got a sort of a philosophical battle going on, because it's hard to figure out, hard to decide what's more depressing out of this, that she's a full-on wingnut or a sleazy suicide blonde.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but then again, I mean, you know.
I mean, she's got, on the there's a screen cap of a video, you know, it just picks it at random or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, the screen cap of her face that goes with this video looks like that she just was born to be sitting next to J.D. Hayworth's goofy face in the "It's Real, I Tell You, Real" infomercial. Those two belong together. Oh, my God. Hey, Garrett, running out of time. Good to hear from you, brother.
Good to hear from you too, Bob.
You take care now.
I certainly will.
All right, later.
See you later.
Our Vegas correspondent, that's Garrett. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Bob, I was just wondering, had you heard that, I heard it on a different show, I was listening back on something because I wanted to see if anybody had bothered to mention Tiananmen Square around the time it had occurred, and I had heard on a podcast from a doctor who had flown into the Gulf region that BP was setting where people could fly. That because BP had set flight restrictions over the Gulf Coast of the United States, the airplane couldn't fly there because they didn't want people to photograph the oil spill.
I know there have been altitude restrictions, but BP, now, I mean, they can do what they want to do down along the coast on the beaches and stuff. You know, they can hire security thugs and stuff like that, and there's video of that, of course. But I don't see how they could restrict the flight area unless they've got a direct line to the FAA, because the FAA and, you know, perhaps Homeland Security makes those decisions. Now, there are altitude restrictions, and it's a very busy flight zone these days, but I can't imagine that of course, because I can't imagine it doesn't mean that it didn't happen. I can't imagine BP having the direct ability to, I mean, what are they going to do, the open fire?
Well, I'm sitting there wondering what's going on. Have we simply decided that Washington and friends were wrong and given back sovereignty to the Queen of England?
Well, sometimes it looks a little bit that way, but...
You know, or is it just because it's a large corporation?
No, that's it. It's no. What you're seeing here, it wouldn't be any different were it Exxon or, well, it would be different if it was Citgo because we would already be bombing Venezuela.
True. But, I mean, even on the beaches, what right does a private corporation have to tell the public whether or not to be on a public beach? If the President of the United States thinks that that is dangerous, he can call out the National Guard.
Precisely.
And restrict them. But it isn't for a goddamn public corporation and a foreign one at that to tell Americans where and where they can't go inside the United States of America. And we need a president that happens to know that. And, you know, if Obama doesn't, let's have Biden.
You know, that video footage was out there last week of the journalist down on the beach being sort of shaken down by some rent-a-cop security guy. And he looked, bless his heart, the journalist looked at him and said, unless you're a representative of the sheriff of whatever parish it was, you have no jurisdiction here.
Mm-hmm. Well, not just that. The guy shaking him down happens to be committing a crime. The guy's probably got a weapon.
You would think that it would be.
You know, it happens to be the same thing as robbery.
Going
through the guy's pockets or that's the same thing as a robbery.
It is. Well, it starts with assault, goes toward battery, and moves up. Yeah, you're right. It does.
The guy should be in jail. Throw all the rent-a-cops in jail. In fact, do we have room in Guantanamo for him?
You know, that's not a bad question.
In fact, one thing with Guantanamo, and I don't know if
or maybe the T. Don Hutto Correctional Center in Texas.
Yeah. Do you know, when did we get the 99-year lease on Guantanamo?
No, I do not know. But
wasn't
I suspect...
that something over 100 years ago?
I suspect it goes back to the Spanish-American War, and that would be, yeah. But
over 100?
But I think it's probably been renewed since then.
By who?
Oh, the Batista government, you know.
I don't think so. I don't think it would have been renewed then because it would have been halfway through, and Castro certainly wouldn't have renewed it. So I think we just happen to be simply homesteading Guantanamo.
I'm looking here. I'm doing some on-the-fly research, see if I can figure it out. The Cuban government opposes the presence of the naval base. Lease is invalid under international law. It was leased for use as a coaling or fueling station following the Cuban-American Treaty of 1903.
That's over 100 years ago.
Even by any stretch of my tormented ability to do math on the fly, that's more than 100 years. Okay, the 1934 treaty reaffirming the lease. 1934. I'd say that they're measuring it probably from 1934.
Yeah, but if it reaffirmed a 99-year lease in, 1903, it would simply reaffirm the treaty, and the 99 years would have gone from 1903.
Let's see. Made the lease permanent, and I'm just reading from Wikipedia here. Made the lease permanent unless both governments agreed to break it or the U.S. abandoned the base property.
Of course, it was after we'd set up a government in Cuba to allow that, right?
Yeah. Okay. So it's a little more than... it's dodgy, to say the very least.
Essentially, it became a territory.
In essence, yeah, absolutely. And getting some info coming in now from David in Tennessee about the rent-a-cops on the beach. The argument being that the rent-a-cops weren't making the beach secure; they were security to protect the cleanup workers because of safety concerns.
Were there any cleanup workers there?
Oh yeah, there were, and that was what he came up and said. You can't talk to them. You can't ask them questions. I'm here to make sure you don't. But I am out of time. I hate to say it, but I am.
Okay. Well, have a good day or rest of the evening, and Hope your weather's better than it was here.
No, it's blistering hot and plenty humid. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care then.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
We are fresh out of show. Thanks to everybody, and sorry to those of you who are still on hold. My apologies. We will be back tomorrow evening. That's all I can say. Thanks go out to all of you who are contributing to the fund. It is climbing. It is growing. It's you know, well over $3,000 at this point, and a long way yet to go. But thank you for your contributions. Thank you to everyone who makes all this go, from Lottie in the chat room to our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee, our op-ed columnist at headonradionetwork.com, Reverbo of Cavalcade of Crazy. Osborne Inc., OSBRNEINK.com, is the home of our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne. Everything happens here because of the continued support as well, not just of the listeners, but of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussin' and a discussin' with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is a balmy 92.5 degrees here in the studio. Looks like we got some more naked radio on the way this evening, and that's fine because you know what? It's Moran Monday on the horn. That special day when we highlight more than usual the excesses and the just plain old-fashioned butt ignorance of what it means to live in right-wing world. And we've got a lot of nominees this evening. There's no getting around it. We are more and poor this evening, because there's bunches and bunches and bunches of them. So the sit back and relax and get ready, because I don't know where to start. Let's see, we've got conservative actress Morans. Oh, look, there's Dolieber Moran. We got more than one Congress Moran. We got fundamentalist Fox TV host Moran. We've got Arizona GOP Superintendent of Education candidate Moran. And what would Moran Monday be without a nice, healthy dose of just plain old-fashioned garden variety? Texas Moran. Constitutional Morans. We got Morans, and I mean plenty. No telling where we might start. Our buddy Mora sent along some photographs from this past weekend's Mermaid Parade in New York City via TPM. Lots of representations at the Mermaid Parade of damaged wildlife and damaged sea creatures as a result of the BP disaster. But, of course, we don't have to worry about imaginary sea creatures, and God knows Tony Hayward isn't, because Tony Hayward has gotten his groove back. Or more appropriately, I suppose, Tony Hayward has gotten his life back. You remember how poor Tony wanted his life back? Right, yeah. Well, Tony got it. Our first Moran of the evening can't help but be BP CEO Tony Hayward, who complained famously, you might recall, that he wanted his life back. Well, over the weekend, he apparently found it. He found it off of the Isle of Wight, I do believe. He attended a yachting race. News story noting on the 19th, that would be Saturday, BP PLC Chief Executive Tony Hayward was spotted attending a prestigious yacht race on Saturday as his company deflects criticism for its handling of one of the worst environmental disasters in U.S. history. Hayward was spotted by photographers on his yacht, Bob. You know, I think I'm going to have to send a cease and desist letter. His yacht, Bob, which was competing at the J.P. Morgan Asset Management Round the Island race off the Isle of Wight. Oh, super, Tony. In an attempt to deflect the obvious bad press, some PR flack for BP said that he was spending some time with his teenage son after devoting most of the past 2 months away from his family. Family. Wow. That's some brass. Yeah, sure enough. That's a bunch of brass. He went yachting. Gee, Tony, why didn't you go yachting in the Gulf? Oh, wait. It's full of your oil! In a shameless attempt to create one of those famous for-profit media false equivalences, Jake Tapper over at ABC.
Investigative journalist Jake Tapper
tweeted. Yes, he tweeted. He tweeted that, meanwhile, the president and vice president are golfing today. Really? Were they golfing on the Isle of Wight? Were they golfing half a world away from the problem? No, I didn't think so. But that's okay, because, you know, there are at least, what's the number here? What's the number? At least 115. 115 Republicans who are in the same camp as Joe Barton, who apologized to BP on behalf of you and me, you know, because they got shaken down. Yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, it's their program.